Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
The entire economy is centered around the exploitation of labor. Corporations exploit workers to maximize short-term profits, but the cost of maximizing in the short term damages long-term productivity. On today's episode, we're going to discuss how the economy of exploitation is damaging to workers and affects their long-term prospects for economic prosperity.
Workers are exploited every day, and it's always for short-term profits because that's what drives capitalism. It is the idea of extracting as much wealth out of any individual as you can at any one point in time. And the best example we have right now is the school system that we have during COVID. It is shining a very crazy light on sort of the decay that's in the system and what's driving the decisions that are being made. And now we all have seen the news where colleges go back and you get 500 cases of COVID almost instantly. And that's because there's short-term profits that are being made by the colleges on tuitions and driving up high costs to be sort of on campus and being involved in sports and all the things that actually are moneymakers for the colleges. And then if you go back down to the next level, which is K through 12, we're seeing that the exploitation happens there is that these institutions have basically become childcare centers for the workers, where people drop their kids off during the day, then pick them up in the afternoon or even in late evening. And we're seeing these things from having after school programs and morning programs, all these things to quote unquote enable the worker, right, to get to work. But really what it is to allow you to work harder for your boss.
Instead of proactively as a policy measure providing childcare and healthcare to kids as sort of a societal benefit so that parents can go to work and feel comfortable that their kids are well taken care of while they're working, we've instead co-opted a public institution, which is a public education system, to benefit private corporations so that they can better exploit the adults. And so that's classic neoliberalism. And it's an example of COVID kind of pushing this problem of neoliberalism to the forefront of, gee, maybe having private entities that exist solely to take advantage of public institutions isn't such a great policy concept.
And during the pandemic, we're seeing lots of school districts make bad decisions. So school districts are claiming that it can be safe to be in person, but what it comes down to is sort of a misguided attempt to get workers, you know, back out into the, you know, essential field or out into the workplace by having their kids come into class. So instead of us paying these workers to stay home and allowing their kids to be remote and learn from their parents and the school district, again, we're forcing them to risk their lives to go in. And that's pure exploitation of the working class.
And it really is a class-based thing, because if you look at school districts kind of across the country, the more affluent school districts are doing the remote training, whereas the more working class districts are doing in-person training. On its surface, it appears as though the more affluent districts could afford some more of the technologies that help with remote learning, like video conferencing and maybe online homework assignments, whatever technology can help cost money, whereas the poorer school districts can't afford that sort of technology, so their kind of only option is to go back to work. But I don't know that that's actually the reasoning behind why one district is choosing to go back and another isn't. But I think it is derived from class, and it's that the poor working class schools are choosing to go back in person because the kids of the working class adults need to be watched during the day while the parents are exploited as workers.
Exactly right. It is pure exploitation of the working class again. We're going to keep saying those terms over and over again, because the less affluent or the working class areas, you know, there's a couple things. There's a misperception that they have to be in school to learn. And the second is that there are no resources for people at home to have their kids anywhere else because they're required to go into their job, whether or not it's manufacturing or whether or not it's a service industry somewhere, so food service or retail. They are forced to leave the house instead of taking care of their kids. And so what drives those districts is not only, you know, the idea that, again, kids have to be in school, but also the material conditions of the parents, which is they have to be at work and they have to get money to feed their kids. They don't have the ability to work remotely. They don't have the ability to take time off. They don't have the ability that one of their parents not work because they're a two-income household. So it's important that during this COVID period, we take and we make sure that we know that every single decision that's being made, you know, through the eyes of the worker is actually through the eyes of the capitalist and through exploitation.
So it's an example of the school districts actually sort of being representative and doing what the parents want, which in this instance is to provide daycare for the kids to go to school so that the parents can work because they need to make money. They don't have the ability to not go to work. And as a result of that, they need their kids to go to school so they don't have to provide childcare. This creates a false incentive where the school district is being representative, but they're not representing the long-term best interest of their constituents. And the reason for this is capitalism. Capitalism is seeking to extract wealth from these workers. And in order for the workers to remain healthy, economically solvent, they need to make sacrifices like going to work. And one of these sacrifices is also sending their kids to school because they really don't have another choice. They have to work. And because they have to work, their kids have to be in school.
Absolutely. Again, the terms that we're going to use here, because it's still part of theory, is it's the material conditions of the world around them forces them to make decisions that they wouldn't normally make unless they were, you know, forced to choose between eating or, you know, not eating, right? So forced to go to work or staying home and, or having a house or rent. And we're seeing lots of things and examples of this where people are behind on their mortgage payments, behind on their rent, right? Maxing out credit cards to eat because they've been laid off. Right, running out of the support that the government was giving for a while, the $600, which was a Bernie Sanders push at that point in time. So we're seeing a lot of desperation. And if you have to go back to work, you have to go back to work. It's the only choice you have.
So we talked a little bit about workers in the service industry as well, and they're being exploited in a similar manner, kind of at a higher level, where a lot of the service-based jobs participate in sort of a shell game of various different corporate entities shuffling money back and forth. And restaurants are kind of a good example of this, where in most cases, it's a real estate play. You'll have two entities. One will be an entity that represents the actual financial kind of profit and loss of a restaurant. And the other entity is basically a property management. And the restaurant entity will pay the profit. And the restaurant entity will pay the property management entity and sort of funnel money from the profits of the restaurant into this other entity. And this is just an example of the service workers go to work at a restaurant, the restaurant profits, the workers don't see a dime of that profit, and the profit is moved into a different entity. So when COVID hit, you saw a lot of these restaurants closed due to insolvency. In some instances, that's actually validly the case, and small businesses did close, but that's in all likelihood not the lump sum of kind of these closures. Most of the closures are due to simply the economic circumstances around this sort of shuffling shell game changing where it's no longer profitable to actually run the restaurant.
Yeah, what happens if you're part of this Ponzi scheme? You show up to work one day hoping that you can get paid and get your paycheck, and the doors are locked and you can't go in. And the other reason for this is that these businesses, these like fast food chains or any places that's quote unquote closing, are designed to extract as much wealth as possible. So you'll see things like lower wages. And that's because the holding company that's holding the properties can charge the fast food business lots and lots of money because it's part of the same vertical integration. It's part of the same stack of people. So the holding company then can ask for more and more money. And guess what? You're going to pay that because you can make those profits. Now the profits will go back to your employees because there are none, because rent's too high. And they can always use that as an excuse. But really, at the end of the day, it's just them extracting as much wealth as possible from the workers, and the workers being screwed over again and again.
So in this example of vertical integration, you have basically streamlined exploitation. So the objective of a lot of these vertically integrated businesses is to just increase the velocity of money. So the same dollar that a consumer spends gets shared amongst many different businesses, and it appears as though there's more money in the economy than there actually is. So again, another ramification of COVID is that the velocity of money is slowing down and people are spending less, which means that that same dollar doesn't get spent at, you know, this restaurant, which then gets taken by the worker, turned around and spent at another restaurant. And within your community, that same dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. And this is leading to a kind of a decrease in overall consumer demand, which means that all these various service-based entities will become less and less solvent from a capitalistic perspective and close. And this will lead to a loss in employment, which we're currently in the middle of, as unemployment's around, you know, high single digits.
And the unemployment that we see in the news, which is currently at 8.4% unemployment rate, and this has been as high as 14% this year as of April. And we don't want to stick to these numbers too much, just giving you guys sort of a relative view of what that U3 is, or unemployment rate is. And so the U3, or the unemployment that gets reported, stands for the total unemployed as a percent of the civilian labor force. So it's basically this unemployment rate that you see. The number that we should always pay attention to, the real number, is the U6. So the U6 number tries to capture everybody that's not only unemployed, but also people that are underemployed. And so they may have had their hours cut, but they're still employed. And so the U3, or the unemployment number, can be a very sort of misrepresented guide to what the economy is really doing. Because if I cut your hours by 15%, or I cut, 15 hours off per week, which is more than 15%, you're not going to see that. It also means if you take a wage decrease. So if you're at, some of the companies around the country that's taking a one-day furlough, or a 20% reduction, or 15% reduction, or 10% reduction, no repay, whatever the number is, you're not captured in that U3. In fact, you're not even captured in the U6. So the U6, technically is called the total unemployed plus all persons marginally attached to the labor force plus total employed part-time for economic reasons as a percent civilian labor force plus all persons marginally attached to the labor force, which is basically broken down to anybody that has a job that's underemployed, anybody that has less hours than they want, and anybody that's unemployed. And all those together is the U6, which is currently at 14.2%, which means a sixth of the working population, roughly, is either underemployed or unemployed, which is a huge, huge number of people. I mean, that's walking down the street and seeing one in six people means that they're underemployed or unemployed themselves, which is, again, just a large number. But take that in consideration. Last year at this time, it was 7.3. So unemployment's doubled. U6 has doubled. It's a big deal right now. And that's why exploitation, and that's why you can have things like, businesses close and all these things happen, because it's under the guise of capitalism. Because right now, the velocity of money is slowing down to nothing, and there's really nothing you can do besides spend. But if you get a check from the government, I'm probably going to pay off debt and not go out and buy anything new, because I need to take care of myself and my family and not make sure that somebody else has a job. And that is the number one issue with the working class when it comes to like unemployment rates, because we cannot take care of ourselves. We rely on the ruling class to give us our little bit of breadcrumbs in order to keep the economy going.
So this also partially explains why people that are employed are okay with sending their kids back to school, because they need to continue to be employed. And if you look at the job prospects kind of just nationwide, it's not great. So if you are employed, you're kind of in the good group where you have an economic ends to make, decisions about food and rent and all those expenses that need to be paid. That's driving your material conditions to be okay with sending your kid back to school, because you don't have another choice. And you're in a better position than a lot of other people.
Right. You're an economic hostage. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't. You have to keep yourself employed so you don't risk the livelihood that you've built. And that means sometimes sacrificing your children to the COVID gods. So we just talked about two examples in which the worker is basically held hostage under capitalism just for the fear of losing a job, right? Fear of losing what they have. But there's also another example in which the fear of losing a job leads to another compounding problem, and that is healthcare. Because the healthcare industry in the United States is tied to your employer. And so if you lose your job or try to change your job, you could have interrupted coverage. You could lose, what little bit of catastrophic health insurance you have, especially if you're in a high deductible plan. Which means that you're sort of stuck with your employer until you can find something better, but that may never come, especially in COVID, because now we may have a surplus of workers. Which means that now the exploitation can take all types of different angles, because not only do we have a surplus of workers potentially out there, but also you have a risk of losing your coverage because it's employer-based.
So there's a surplus of labor right now, and that means that businesses can be more selective about who they hire, and they might not have to pay as high of a wage. And the healthcare carrot is there as well. Where it used to be that healthcare was maybe a kind of a good benefit of a job where, oh, I want to work at this company because they have good healthcare. Well, that concept has kind of been, I'm going to say, inverted, where now companies don't really provide good healthcare. They just provide healthcare. It's not a differentiator anymore. But because workers are boxed into their current job and they need the healthcare, other benefits can be cut. Looking around at the field of potential workers, businesses might assess that, oh, we don't need to offer the great benefits that we currently offer. We're going to offer shittier benefits. And you can either stay employed or we'll find somebody else to do your job.
Yeah, it's not just offering you shitty benefits. It's things like, we're not going to freeze your copay requirements. We're going to increase that. Or we're not going to freeze your deductibles. We're going to increase those. Or the percent you have to pay for your premiums every month. Or just lack of coverage in general. We're going to make your prescription instead of $10 a prescription, $15 prescription. Because they can. Because they're trying to shave costs. Because they have economic requirements. They have a P&L or a profits and loss data sheet. Right? They have to try to quote unquote balance their profits or balance their costs to make more profits. And it's really important to realize that the worker always loses in this scenario. So healthcare is one of them. You're always going to lose. You may freeze any raises you're going to get. You may freeze, any of your benefits for vacation time. You'd be forced to take vacation. You may lose your sick time. All these things are going to come up because there's a gluttony of workers, which means people are going to be willing to take a cut in their pay in order for them to stay employed. And we see it time and time again, especially during the recession. It's a way for them to trim the fat, they say, or cut away the dead branches. What are you going to say? They come in, they do a 10% layoff. Every person has to get rid of 3 people from their department. Whatever happens to be, there's some excuse all the time in order to shave off your wages or shave off how much you make in order to increase profits.
And to wrap this back around again to the public school situation is, you're willing to do whatever you need to do to remain employed. And if that means that your kid has to go back to school, that's an economic risk that you sort of have to be willing to take as a member of the working class.
So we just talked about a few institutions that we hold dear and how the workers get screwed over every single day by these institutions. So just know that as a worker in a capitalist system, like every institution in your life kneels before the altar of capitalism. Anything that actually benefits a worker is collateral damage to the corporate profits. That means that every single time a corporation gives something away, it remembers that and it attempts to correct that in the future.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.